Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. Today, I am going to share with you a podcast that I did on somebody else's show. It's an interview, and his name is Andrew Howard. He has a new podcast called The Renegades, and I believe I am the fourth or fifth podcast on his thing. He's a young guy. He's also a veteran. He was a Marine, and I was in the Navy, so he moved here to San Miguel de Allende. Well, actually, he's in a close city called Querétaro, but he was here for a while, and we met up, and really cool guy, and so we talk a lot about our life here in Mexico, why we chose to move here, what it's been like, our transition from being in the U.S. military into moving down here. Obviously, kind of a strange thing, especially for two young guys. He's much younger than I am, and so, you know, he's in his mid-20s. And so I thought it was a good conversation, and I hope you like it. And yeah, so I just want to remind everybody, if you like the show, please follow me on, we have a new Telegram channel, so it's just Borderless Blog on Telegram. And if you could also go to the website and sign up for the email newsletter. Well, it's not really a newsletter, but I do send out every time there's a podcast or something. So it helps me keep up with people in case one of the social media gets taken down, one of the channels or something like that happens. I can keep in touch with people through the email. So please do that. So I'm going to get into the show, but first I want to talk about the sponsor, and that is Borderless Health Insurance. Whether you're an expat, digital nomad, or international traveler, you need to have health insurance. Paying out of pocket works for most standard procedures, but if you need to go to a hospital or having ongoing care, costs can get out of control quickly. Many people don't know that medical bills can get into the hundreds of thousands of dollars in places like Latin America. But they can, and the companies we work with process many such claims every year. If you are uninsured, you are risking being forced to go to underfunded hospitals in case of emergency, and these public programs are not meant to be safety nets for foreigners. To get top-notch private care, you will need to provide proof of insurance, or they will not attend to you. You don't want to depend on GoFundMe and the generosity of your friends and family if anything unfortunate would happen to you. So think ahead and make healthcare insurance part of your plan. Go to borderlesshealthinsurance.com to get more information and schedule an appointment to find the best plan for you and your family. Again, that's borderlesshealthinsurance.com. Don't be the next GoFundMe. All right, let's get into the show. Borderless.
All right, Mr. James Duesman, great to have you on. Welcome to the Renegade. How you doing today?
Yeah, man, awesome. Congratulations on launching the podcast. That's cool. Also, I wanted to say, you know, congratulations. I did see that you recently got married. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. I appreciate that as well. Thank you. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. So now you, me, and Derek Bros all have our women from San Miguel de Allende, I believe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's definitely, you know, obviously huge cultural differences. And I think in the U.S. has gotten very accustomed to prolonging adulthood. And, you know, before, if you took somebody like in the 1950s, and I'm not saying that was a perfect time to live or anything like that, but if you took, you know, your average 20-year-old male in the 1950s or maybe 25-year-old male, let's say, they probably were getting close to owning a house or already did own a house. They were probably married, you know, had a job that would pay for everything. So yeah, it's really interesting. Like a lot of the younger generation just wants to, you know, go to college, stay in college, work a dead end job, not really like not really proceed in life, you could say.
Yeah. You know, who's written a lot about that is John Taylor Gatto. I'm sure you're familiar.
The teacher from
Underground History of American Education.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the book, The Underground History of American Education. People haven't read that. I mean, that is like absolute must read. And, yeah, he talks about, adolescence and how that really adolescence is a creation. And, in the past, they didn't even have adolescence. It was basically, you know, when you were young, you went through kind of a classical education. And by the time you were 14, you're like out doing stuff, apprenticing, whatever, but you're out in the world. And if you look at a lot of the people that were, he also documents a lot about the people that were in the, you know, the beginning of the United States and early 1800s and 1700s and stuff, that basically, you know, they were like 15, 16. And a lot of the people that we know of that were involved in, you know, a lot of things, writing these amazing books and even, you know, fighting Revolutionary War and all this type of stuff. They're like 16, 17 a lot of times. So, yeah.
Yeah. Super young. It's funny because in Mexico, like you know, kids still go to school in Mexico, of course, but the kids here are just significantly more mature. And I mean, it's funny. I'll see like 10-year-olds riding ATVs around and, you know, and I remember one time I went to this taco shop and I saw this kid. He had to be 9 or 10 and he had his hat on. He had like the full kind of, you know, he looked like a little adult basically. And he just flipping, you know, cooking tacos and working with his parents. And that's a really good thing. Like it's, not only is it good for kids to get experience in work and understand what the real world is like and develop that kind of understanding, but I also think that it's very good for kids to work with their parents as well and develop that relationship with their parents. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Man. A lot of times down here, you'll see kids, you know, working with their parents at the local shop or, you know, whatever it is that they're selling, maybe, you know, food or whatever. And yeah, I think that's really interesting. You know, I was talking with my fiance the other day that, and she couldn't believe that in the United States, you're actually obligated to put your kids in school. Like here, it's an option. You know what I mean? It's really not a big deal. If you don't want to put your kids in school, have them work with you, then you can certainly do that. And obviously, if your only option is a public school, I would highly recommend that you do that, you know? But yeah, when I told her, she was like, why would you even put your kids in this, in school? Because they were arguing about, I don't know, you know, one of these cultural issues, like trans, they're reading trans books or cultural Marxism or something like that, or critical race theory or something in school. And on the news, they were arguing about it. She was like, well, why don't you just not put your kid in school? I was like, well, there they have to.
You don't have a choice. Yeah, in the land of the free, you don't have a choice. It's nuts.
Yeah, that's tough.
Crazy. So, like, diving into the Mexico thing, so can you kind of share why, I mean, you're an American, you're from America, of course, and, you know, you've got deep roots there, and you decided to move to Mexico, which is quite a change, and not a lot of people do that. So can you maybe explain, like, what's going on there?
Yeah, well, originally I was doing the kind of the perpetual traveler, you know, PT theory is what it's called, and kind of that strategy. Basically, the strategy is you can travel around the world and live on tourist visas and put your you know, different assets and different flags in different countries as far as your citizenship, your bank account, your residency, and all that. You just kind of strategically plan. And then you continuously travel around. You know, I think that there's a lot of people that influenced me to doing that. And I always thought that was cool. I started out in, obviously, you know, I was in the Navy, which, you know, I saw a lot of different places, a lot of different countries and all that. And then when I came back, I wanted to continue to see different places. So I went to Madrid and then the Caribbean, and then mostly I've been in Latin America, but that was my strategy, just basically to move around. And originally came here to Mexico. I went to Acapulco, and that was fun. And, you know, I was selling condos and writing for the financial newsletter, Dollar Vigilante. And at the time it was a financial newsletter. I guess it's not really anymore, but it used to be about financial stuff. That was kind of, it was just really crazy there. And I didn't feel like I was like establishing a good, you know, foundation for myself. And so I still did a lot of traveling and things like that, but I came down here to San Miguel de Allende, and, which is kind of central Mexico. And, I really liked it here, and I built up a lot of friends. Like I said before, my fiance's from here. And so I really am more of there's a difference between a digital nomad, a perpetual tourist, and an expat. And I would definitely consider myself more of an expat now. I'm basically always in Mexico. I don't go traveling all over the place. This isn't really, I mean, yeah, it's a home base, but I'm pretty much always here, especially with the COVID stuff kind of solidified that in my mind. I mean, I know I have a lot of friends that are traveling a lot still and still doing the perpetual traveler thing, and that's cool. For me, all the restrictions and things like that are just way too irritating to me. I do not want to go flying around. I was pissed off enough with flying after 9/11. And now it's even worse, and just the lines and people barking at you and having, you know, all these different papers and who knows with the passports, or whatever they come down with.
Yeah, you're like cattle.
And yeah, so I just don't like to be treated that like that. So, you know, here I do whatever I want to. I'm free. I have no restrictions like that in my life. And I mean, I do realize that this is the plan. They want to have people, you know, kind of in their individual little cities where they don't travel too much and they're more easily controlled, kind of like a Hunger Games type of scenario.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of the end plan. And I realize that. And so maybe I'm just, you know, responding to incentives the way I shouldn't be, but I just don't want to. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who's, you know, really into freedom and all this kind of stuff, but he's doing more of the perpetual traveler thing. Strategy. And he said he's had 4 like of the down the nose PCR tests. Right. Oh.
How are you free if you're forced to do something like that in order to have the kind of lifestyle you want?
Right. Right. So, you know, I don't want to do that. And, I've switched over from the, perpetual travel, which I originally came to Mexico and I was kind of Latin American general, Chile and Colombia. And, you know, another thing is, Latin America I liked it, you know, first of all, because I speak Spanish. When I was growing up, I spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico. My father's from Puerto Rico, and I used to live with my grandmother during the summers. And so, you know, the Latin culture works a lot better for me. I'm able to fit in, I can talk, and that helps a lot. And so, you know, another thing is that other places in Latin America that I had considered and I'd spent time, Chile and Colombia mostly. Another thing we're talking about with the COVID, I mean, they were complete, both of them went complete extreme lockdown. So,
I've noticed, sorry to interrupt, but I've noticed compared to the other Latin American countries, Mexico is extremely lenient on the COVID stuff. Yeah. Like and maybe you know a more exact number, but I believe it's one of somewhere around 5 or 7 countries that in the world that doesn't require a PCR test upon entry. Do you know more about that? Is that like fairly accurate?
No, I don't know exactly how many it is, but I'm in all kinds of different COVID traveler groups and Freedom Cell stuff and whatever that I see on forums and in Telegram and all this. So I stay up on it. And yeah, that question gets asked all the time. And there's, I think a handful of countries that you can travel freely to. And Mexico has been one of those. And I think like every digital nomad in the world is in Tulum right now or Miami or, you know what I mean? Like, well, Miami, to go to Miami. But you know what a lot of people are doing? I was just talking to this guy yesterday who's been going to Miami a lot for Bitcoin conferences and stuff. And he said that it's very easy. He just does like Adobe Acrobat and it's very easy to just fake the thing to get into the States. You know, they require a test.
Here's the thing. I mean, I've noticed in the media right now, they're talking about that. They're saying, you know, I saw an article saying something like, how do I know if, you know, people around me have been vaccinated? And I think they're just putting this idea out there in people's minds, like, oh my gosh, you know, I got the vaccine and I did what, you know, I did my part. And, but John over there, how do I know if John's vaccinated and he should get me sick? And the logic is totally flawed because just in my mind, it just doesn't make sense. If you're getting this vaccine, that would mean you're immune to the disease, right? So then if you're immune to the disease, then why do I need to get the vaccine? If, you know, let's say I have the disease and I give it to you, you got the vaccine. So theoretically, right, under your logic, you should be fine. But anyways, what were we saying there?
About the PCR test in Mexico and that it looks like it's easy copied. But yeah, I think where you were going with that is, you know, that they'll probably be looking for ways to where it's more like
legit.
They can verify
that you've actually been taking it. Based off of technology. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, you know, I don't even understand how people can think that a COVID, you know, a vaccine passport, or whatever, is some kind of weird idea or conspiracy or something. I mean, obviously that's what people are going to want. I mean, we have the technology to do it. They're building it. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't, you know, a lot of these status control freaks and people out there, they're going to want it. I mean, you can probably ask, you know, half the people out on the street, you know, in your average American city, and they'll probably say that, yeah, they think it's a good idea. So it's not like it's a crazy thing to think about.
It's not. It's not. And the public has been conditioned for years. We've had all these stares with all these diseases in the last 10, 20 years. You know, the media just constantly throwing these new horrible diseases out in these places where nobody's at. And, you know, but they believe whatever the TV is telling them, and they think it's a real threat. And then suddenly COVID comes up, and it's like, oh shit, this thing's a worldwide pandemic. And, you know, and the vaccine is really the only answer that they're putting out there.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think it's a worldwide pandemic. You know how I feel about it. I think this entire thing is a hoax. And I'm not saying, when I say hoax, like 9/11 is a hoax. 9/11 is a hoax. I'm not saying two buildings didn't fall down. I'm not saying that didn't happen. But the official narrative we are given about 9/11 just doesn't make any sense. And right now you have two military members who, you know, used to have guns in their hands and be willing to obey orders, who now disagree with the official narrative of 9/11. Yeah. So there's no reason we should be called crazy for that, or questioning the same thing with COVID. The same sick group of people who orchestrated 9/11 have orchestrated this whole COVID thing as well. So, like,
yeah, you know, 9/11, I just wanted to, you know, 9/11 was, for me, was probably one of the biggest pieces, that, you know, a lot of people use the analogy waking up or whatever, or had me change my form of thinking. 9/11 was a big one, because, even just questioning it, you know, so this was way after I'd gotten out of the whole time I was in the military, I bought the whole thing, you know, and they would show us all these videos of terrorists cutting people's heads off on the ship, and we're very propagandized. And and then when I got back, you know, I thought it was kind of weird, like when people would be anti-military or something, like I didn't understand. I was like, how can somebody be, we're fighting for your freedoms, you know what I mean? Like, why would anybody be against that? And I just, it never dawned on me anything different. And then I remember that I started seeing some information online about 9/11, and I was like, that is kind of crazy. Let me see, look. And once I saw a lot of information that didn't make sense and all that, even just the act of like questioning it and thinking that, wait a minute, could people be really capable of this? Then I was like, well, I mean, if they're capable of killing a million people, why wouldn't they, you know, at least not care about 2,000 people that have to die in order for them to kill a million, so that they can, you know, control billions, you know? So, so anyways, that was a big thing that kind of changed in my mind once I got, you know, the idea that, oh, wait a minute, maybe the government isn't completely on my side, and maybe the powerful people are, you know, are actually manipulating me or something. And then I just started questioning everything. And then I just remember the phenomenon of, I just felt like a moron. Like, I felt like I didn't know anything. Like, I thought that I was a very informed person. But then when I really started going down the rabbit hole about different things and reading books, and I was like, whoa, I got a lot of books to read. I got a lot of stuff to catch up on, because I know nothing. I am stupid.
Yeah. And so, well, that's the one of my favorite quotes is from Mark Twain, when he says, it's easier to fool a man than to convince a man that he has been fooled. Mm-hmm. And most people don't want to feel that way, because I felt the same exact way when I learned about 9/11 and all these other, you know, outside of the box, quote, conspiracy theory topics that are actually. Go ahead.
I was actually pretty pissed for a while. I would listen to antiwar.com. I listened to Scott Horton and stuff like this every day. And because this was stuff I didn't know. Honestly, you know what I mean? And I was pretty pissed on it when, you know, listening to that every day, because I felt like I'd just been completely fooled.
Yeah. I mean, we were, that's how they get you. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security has contracts with, maybe it's not the Department of Homeland Security, but some military branch of the government has contracts with the NFL. So they do that thing where they have all the troops there and they have the flag lined out. And in movies, whenever, you know, it's always, we're so heavily propagandized through movies, television, school is really the biggest one. And then in America, of course, at least in a lot of parts of the country, like if you're in the military, you're a man. Like that's the thing in America. They look at it, they look up to it. Like it's an honorable thing, but really a true man has autonomy over his own life and he doesn't take orders from other men. Like what the hell?
Right.
You know, a true man is somebody that like demands freedom, right? That wants to prosper, that wants to help others have the same thing. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is, you know, I talk to a lot of different people and, you know, these days, in the United States, the left has been kind of very aggressive. What you is kind of, I guess you'd call right conservative types, you know, I talk to a lot of them and, you know, they're upset about, like I was talking about before in school, you know, the critical race theory or Marxism or something like this, or, you know, with the new CIA ad coming out with like the with the Latino woman. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's pretty funny.
I haven't.
Okay.
I've not seen
well,
that.
The Army and the CIA have been coming out with all these like very woke advertisements to try to get people to join them. And I mean, that's, I understand that. So they're all pissed off and they think that's the worst thing in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I interrupt there? I remember seeing one of a woman who had two, and I don't have anything against lesbian moms. I know lesbian moms. I'm friends.
Oh yeah. That's the Army one.
Is that the one?
That's the Army one, but there's several that have come out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I get it. And they're upset about all that. And, you know, at the same time, I try to stress, it's like, yeah, but also, I mean, the school in general, it's got all kinds of, you know, so they're worried about that kind of propaganda. But I mean, you got all the state propaganda. I mean, you know, the school is full of state propaganda and you know, the military is the state. But you know what I mean? But we're propagandized by the state all the time. They have no problem with that. And that's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want my kids to be, you know, brainwashed with cultural Marxism or critical race theory or whatever either. But I also don't want it to be brainwashed into worshiping the state. You know, I wanted to take some time out real quick to mention one of our sponsors, and that is Crypto Quantum Leap. A lot of people are getting into crypto lately. If you've heard episode 111, you know that Mark Wootzer is a professional crypto speculator and a DeFi investor. He was able to retire in his 30s and travel the world with his wife through his crypto investment strategy, and he now helps others invest in the space with his course Crypto Quantum Leap, his newsletter Project Serenity, and his hedge fund for accredited investors. If you want to learn more about buying and selling cryptocurrencies and investing in the developing blockchain ecosystem, you should start with his online course, The Crypto Quantum Leap. I know that I've been knowledgeable about crypto for a long time, but when I took his course, I still learned a lot. In the course, you'll learn about the differences, types of exchanges, and the one he recommends, along with step-by-step instructions on how to open an account and deposit funds into it, the differences between wallets, and the best wallet for you. He will also teach you how to create more sovereignty for your finances through encryption and anonymity. So check out his course at borderlessblog.com/crypto and enter the code borderless at checkout to get 10% off. If you're interested in the newsletter or hedge fund, you can send me an email at info@borderlessblog.com. So again, get started with Crypto Quantum Leap at borderlessblog.com/crypto and use the code borderless. Let's get back into the show. But I also don't want it to be brainwashed into worshiping the state, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So. I totally agree. It's really nuts thinking of how much government people in the U.S. especially just have in their lives, how intimately involved the government is with their lives. You know, the car they step in to drive, you know, the place they go to work, their entire life. And so many Americans are dependent. I don't know how many. I don't know what the exact statistic is, but there are just so many Americans that need to have money from the government in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And so So let's go on to that. I mean, as far as like, you know, you're in Mexico, you're from America, you're kind of watching things from an outside point of view, which is really, weird to me. I've only been in Mexico for what, a year and 3 months. So it's still kind of new to me to watch essentially the country we're from collapse and get in these, what looks like a brewing race war. So where do you picture things going with the empire in the US?
Well, you know, I'm honest with people. I have been talking pretty loudly about this for like, I don't know, over 10 years for sure, 13 years, 14 years, probably 15 years, because really 2008 is when I really kind of panicked. I had a lot of real estate back then, and I just foreclosed on everything. I did what's called strategic default, and I had perfect credit, was paying all the bills, and then just one day I decided, because all the property was going down and all this, and so I just, boom, I said, I'm out. And I left, and I went to Madrid, and that was a long time ago. That was 12 years ago, something like that. And then I was studying economics in Madrid when we had the European debt crisis. And then it looked like, you say, holy shit, the United States is going to blow up. Then the European, the whole thing was going to blow up, and everybody just kept pushing debt off and off. And my first job out of college was with Peter Schiff. So that gives you perspective. You know, I've been thinking that there's been going to be a dollar collapse for a long time, and it hasn't happened. But the thing is that the situation hasn't gotten better.
No, so it's only gotten increasingly worse. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you think about the Tea Party, if you think about the Occupy Wall Street, if you think about all these things, the European debt crisis, none of this was ever solved.
Yeah.
And like last year, I mean, this is insane. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't understand, to be honest with you. I'm just like kind of demoralized the idea. The economy doesn't make any rational sense. They're just, the amount of debt and bailouts, and now they're trying to go to MMT and all this. It's just crazy. And I don't, it can't mathematically work. They've pushed it off a lot longer than I thought they would have. But yeah. As far as you're talking about with Mexico, I think that Mexico, they're much more prepared for something like that. First of all, it's not going to be the center of the collapse. I think that
it's already collapsed too. Yeah. I think they've already been through what America is about to go through, in the 90s when they had that inflation.
They've had a lot of, older people have been through several very big inflations and interest rate spikes and all this type of stuff. And so, basically everybody is not as levered up. Right. So they, mortgages are nowhere near what they are in the States. So if you want to get a mortgage here, most people don't have mortgages at all. Most people just own their property outright, normally with their family, which is a different thing too. Normally what they have is they have a deed with all the family on it. So maybe you'll have 5 to 10 people on one deed, and everybody in the family knows that no matter what happens, they can go back and live with their family for free and eat rice and beans for $2 a day, and they're not going to be homeless. So that's why you don't really see, I mean, you see people living in some shacks and stuff, and some really, but you don't see like homeless people with nobody and nothing, right? They have family, they have a place to go, and you can eat very, very cheap. So
yeah, you can, and you can eat good too.
Yeah. 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 So I think that's, a lot of people are used to kind of living in the United States, you consider to be poor, and they can handle that. And, I also think that in Mexico, a lot of people can, do things with their hands. So like, I don't know, Dave Smith has this funny bit in his, in Libertas. And if you haven't have you seen Libertas?
I know exactly what you're going to talk about, and I please explain it again.
Yeah, yeah.
For anybody that hasn't seen it, it's pretty, pretty funny and pretty accurate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always love to show Libertas to people. If anybody hasn't seen it, I'm like, oh, you got to watch it. So I put it on, I make sure that my friends watch that because I love that thing. Dave Smith's great. But he was talking about like if you were stranded on a desert island and you had like 5 Americans, you would just be so fucked. Right. And so he's like, you would trade your best American for a crippled Mexican. You know what I mean? You can pick fruit.
fuck it, you pick fruit.
Yeah, no, I think you said like
how to do graphic design.
Yeah, exactly. You said like five Americans, and like, you know, you asked one and he goes, oh, I do graphic design. And he said, I would take one Mexican kid over any five Americans any day.
He's like, I'm a drummer and a lawyer. I'm a graphic designer. You know, I just, yeah. But so it's true. I mean, like, it's amazing, man, because, you know, I've done real estate and all kinds of things like that renovations, things like that in Mexico. And it's amazing what people can get done, man. They can really get work done. They work freaking hard. And
yeah, they do work hard.
Yeah, they can get electricity. And I mean, they'll build – I got a house being built right behind me. And they're, like, building it with it's just, like, 10 guys. They're building it with, like, just hand tools. They're building the entire brick house. Like, I don't know. It's just crazy what people can do. But so – because then when you're thinking about supply shocks, you know, and again, we're not sure what this is going to look like. I mean, are we going to have electrical outages, you know, food shocks?
We're already seeing water, gas shortages right now.
Gas shortages, things like this. So it's hard to say. It's hard to, like, you know, there are people that say that, you know, thinking that you can prepare for something like that is just dreaming, because you really can't. But the best thing you could do, I mean, I'd say is, you know, have some actual skills, right? Some physical skills to be able to do things. Even, you know, things like growing food and taking care of animals and building houses and electricity, plumbing, stuff like this. I think that there's just, as far as the percentage of the population, there's a lot less people that know how to do that stuff in the States.
I totally agree. Yeah, 100% agree. And the difference is, like, the United States does not make anything. I mean, very rarely do you see something made in the U.S. And when it's made in the U.S., sometimes the companies even, like, trying to really market that. And, you know, it's not common to see something made in the U.S., but a lot of things are produced in Mexico. Mexico is a big producer. And if you don't make stuff, you don't have stuff. And the only reason America has stuff right now and has, you know, is, quote, the wealthiest nation on earth, which is not true at all. Mm-hmm. But the only reason America has been able to accumulate so much wealth in the last 70 years is solely because of the dollar. Like, that's it. And the reason the dollar is so strong is because, as Paul Krugman said, award-winning economist, the dollar is backed by men with guns. So the United States is just, you know, paying for things extremely cheaply because we are lucky enough to have world reserve currency status, which is going to go away. I mean, you have billionaires like Stanley Druckenmiller saying within 10 to 15 years, the dollar is probably going to lose its reserve currency status. 10, 15 years seems like a far off distance, but yeah, I mean, you get my point. I mean, it's, and I also think it affects the culture as well. You know, it is rewarding to build things and to produce things and to work with your hands. And it's fine if you work in an office as well, but just to have a country that really produces things.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's fine if you have an office, but somebody has to make something.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's got to make the desk you work on. Yeah. And yeah, I totally agree.
You know, I was I was thinking about that the other day. I went to a wedding here. Wedding, I mean, by the way, out here in Guanajuato, probably 300 people in attendance. Big party, no masks, no social distance, no nothing. It was a
nice
giant party. So anyways, and just talking to people there. And I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like, you know, a lot of people, they started out very, you know, poor, or, you know, they were considered, you know, not really nothing going for them. I mean, very poor by American standards. And now, you know, they have careers. They make big transformers here. They make car parts, and they have all these kinds of things. And so, you know, they actually, like, have created, put, you know, they're now in the middle class. You know, they are buying homes, buying, you know, cars, by actually making things and having careers in a specific field of expertise. And I, you know, I know that does exist some in the States, but, you know, it's amazing. They're actually creating a middle class of people. And it's just not something I see so much in states. You know, almost everybody, you know, I know they have, you know, they're, maybe it's just the crowd I run in, but, you know, they make their money just doing stuff online or whatever. I mean, you know, I do the same. So, but I'm trying to get more into doing some things with, you know, learning more skills or whatever. But yeah, it's just I thought that was interesting. Everybody I talked to actually had brought themselves out of what we would consider to be extreme poverty, and now we're living middle class lives with a career that was like with this specialty making physical things that people need in cars and power plants and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome. It's and it's awesome that they, I mean, I'm assuming probably did not get any assistance from the government. And
yeah,
in Mexico, I mean, if you just think about it, if you're not getting all of this free money from your government, then who are you going to turn to for help? You're going to turn to your family and your friends, and you're going to feel really uncomfortable doing that. And you're not going to want to just leech off of your family and friends for a long time. So there's not really there's more of an incentive to start working, start being self-sustaining, you know, having a good, prosperous life and not depend on other people. Right. But it also just just solidifies the structure of that family unit, which I talk about this a lot. In the US, families are just absolutely broken. And the government, the state, has been replaced parents have been replaced with the state, I think, you know, and that starts with schooling. Kids are really raised by the government versus, you know, their parents. So one question I wanted to ask you is the grass. I mean, obviously the grass isn't always greener on the other side. I think it's definitely a lot greener in Mexico, but, you know, I mean, not everywhere is perfect. So what are some downfalls that you would maybe say to somebody who's considering moving to Mexico and is kind of on the fence? Well, or some things that you should just know in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's, you know, first of all, I want to say that I'm not happy about the situation that we're in worldwide. And yes, for the moment, Mexico has been great with this COVID thing. For the reasons that we're talking about, I am optimistic about how it is. But, you know, unfortunately, even here, we're at the whims of our politicians and of the politicians. And, you know, it's just we have a rising, I mean, it seems to me that statism is getting worse, and it's just something that lives in people's minds. And yeah, you know, luckily AMLO has left the country open. But I mean, I don't know how probable this is, but you know, somebody else could be voted in and decide that they want to do the same thing as Colombia. I don't know if that would work or not, but I'm just saying that I think that we've been lucky with Mexico. But like, for instance, Florida. You know, Florida's open, a lot of people going to Florida, but DeSantis just barely won. And if DeSantis wouldn't have won, it probably would have been like New York, right? Completely locked down. So, yeah, Mexico's great now, and I hope that it continues to be. But we have a big problem with people that have authoritarian ideas and statism in their head. And until we recognize that problem, then, you know, we can try to live as freely as we can within that system, but it's a big problem. I just want to say that I really think that's the main issue. As far as, downsides, well, I mean, Mexico is a giant country, just like the United States. So there's all kinds of different areas which are completely different. You have, you know, cities, beaches, you know, central Mexico, where we are, is more mountainous. They all had different kind of responses over the last year as well. They are, you know, some are more industrial, some are more kind of rural and things like that. So you really have to look at what exactly you would like or consider living in. And then they can answer, you know, someone can answer you about how it is there, because they're also very different. A lot of cultural ways and things like that.
It's true.
For, you know, the language, for instance, If you don't speak Spanish, there are places you could get around where I am in San Miguel de Allende. You can get around, but in a lot of Mexico, you can't, you know. So in Querétaro is probably harder to get around without speaking Spanish.
Yeah, it's not easy here. I've definitely, yeah. My Spanish has improved significantly since living in Querétaro. But it definitely depends on where, just like the U.S., you know, I mean, it just depends on where you're at, and you're an entirely different world. If you, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, California, and if I drove 6 hours to Arizona, it's like a completely different, you know, completely different world, culture, values, society, everything. I understand that. So go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to continue with some of the things. Obviously the thing everybody always asks is about safety. Here where I am in San Miguel, it's very safe. I mean, literally like nothing happens. It's sometimes in a bad, you know, like a really, the ghetto or whatever you want to call it, the bad part of town, some drug dealers will like shoot each other or something. But I mean, where doesn't that happen? So, you know, but there are places that aren't as safe. That you probably, you know, don't want to go just bumbling around as a gringo and not even know what you're doing. You got to keep, you know, just like, you know, in your St. Louis, you're not going to go hang out in the ghetto in St. Louis and be up at a strip club at 2 o'clock in the morning in the ghetto of Chicago. Right. And it's probably not, you know, there's a high risk that something's going to happen to you. So, sure. You got to keep your wits about you, you know, and things like that. For the most part, I think, especially where we are, it's relatively safe. But I know people are a lot of times are worried about that. They see the big the trucks with the federales with you know, big guns and stuff, and that really makes them afraid. But you know, the thing is, those guys are never going to mess with you. They do not care about you. They don't even see.
They're not. I've never seen anybody or had personally any bad experience with those guys, like in the trucks with the guns. And obviously I don't enjoy seeing government people with guns and trucks. I hate it.
Yeah.
But it's funny too, because in Mexico, like when a cop pulls you over in the United States, they can really just potentially ruin your life. I mean, for the rest of your life, you know, for something that maybe doesn't even hurt anybody else, you know? Or even if it's not a severe penalty that you have with a US cop, you got to pay this ticket that costs $200. You got to go to traffic court, all these things. In Mexico, in Mexico, that's not the case. You know, you just hand them some pesos and say, have a nice day. And it's just easier. Yeah. And the cops know that. I think the cops just know that these laws are kind of ridiculous. And, you know, they'd rather just be okay with getting their salary from the people too, if you know what I mean, versus entirely the government. And so that's another, like, I feel so free in Mexico for that reason. Like, even just driving it. I remember just, you know, in the U.S., you'll be driving a car doing nothing wrong, but a cop can just pull you over for no reason. They didn't find anything wrong with what you're doing because they have all of these laws that are just so arbitrary. And I love that about Mexico. Like, it feels so much more free because the police are not, they don't have that power hunger like they do in the U.S.
Yeah. Sometimes some of the traffic guys can act like assholes and whatever, but you know, but you're very right. You know, in the States, you're just like you see a cop, you just tense up. You're like, oh shit. You know what? Like, and, it's not a white or black thing. You know, I hate to break that to people, but it's the state versus everybody else. You know, they just do this stuff to you. And, I used to get tickets all the time, you know, speed traps and stuff. Cause I would drive around a lot when I was younger. And you just never know, because they can just, you know, search you or whatever. It's completely different attitude down here. They're not, you know, I've never been threatened to, you know, lock me up or anything like that. You know, they don't even really pull you over, to be honest with you. Have you ever been pulled over?
I just historically have, I don't know what it is, but cops seem to like me more than the average person. I've been pulled over for, it was so weird, actually. I got pulled over one time for not wearing a seatbelt. Like,
really?
What? And I've seen like, seven family members all with kids under 10 not wearing seatbelts in one vehicle that fits like five people. Like, are you kidding me right now?
Where was that?
It was actually, it was near Celaya, which is not a good area. And I'm pretty sure it was because I had California plates. So, I mean, there are things like that where you don't want to stick out like a sore thumb. And for me, I had California plates. So I definitely was sticking out like a gringo. And, you know, you got to be smart and get a car with Mexican plates and stuff like that. But other than that, I really have had no major like horrible experiences with getting pulled over in Mexico. And it's funny.
They don't even look at you.
No, no. And it's funny because like when I initially moved here with all of my stuff in my car from LA, I drove through the Tijuana border and there was no one there to check my papers. Like literally nobody there.
Yeah, you just right in. Yeah.
I just drove right in. And I've noticed like, unless you're an asshole to them, they will not cause problems. I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part. Yeah. 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 That's true. And even, you know, even like DUIs, you know, it's kind of funny because I know there's a lot of people very sensitive to the idea of drinking and driving. And I would say that the, you know, probably people aren't going to like this, but I think that generally the attitude is different in Mexico because it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, yeah, obviously it's not good to be completely shit faced and drive, but it's not like, you know, in the United States, it's like, oh my, you know, if you had three beers and then you drive and it's just like, you're going to kill somebody or something. I mean, and anyways, even so down here, if you do, the DUI is just like a ticket. So, I mean, yeah, if you have an accident, or whatever, you got to pay for it.
Sure.
And you got to deal with that. But, so it's just anyways, and I think it's kind of weird too, in the States, kind of hypocritical because there's bars everywhere. And there's cars in front of the bars. How do you think people are getting home? I mean, people drink and drive, but they just act like that never happens or, you know, just it's the worst thing in the world, but everybody does it.
Yeah. Well, I think like the difference in the U.S. versus Mexico on drinking and driving is in the U.S., they put the responsibility on the government. And in Mexico, it's more of a personal responsibility. And honestly, I see a significant more amount of car accidents in the U.S. than I do in Mexico.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
I don't see very many car accidents in Mexico, and they don't have all of these traffic laws. They don't have all these DUI checkpoints, and you know, like people, when people don't have this authoritarian state just ruling over them all the time, you can find a way to work things out, and you know, you can determine. In general, like, okay, I shouldn't drink this much or else I'm going to feel this way. I know myself. So yeah. Anyways, I think that's a really good point you brought up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that. I've thought about that. I'm not sure why exactly that is, but you're right. I mean, well, like mostly here in San Miguel, you drive slow. I mean, there are some highways and stuff, but for the most part, it's slow driving city. So that might have to do with it, but no, I never, you know, especially like the really big, you know, in the States, you always see a lot of like really deadly crashes on highways and stuff, or like piles up and a lot of people dying and shit. And I never ever see that, you know what I mean? And and it's pretty open. I mean, there are people that drive after drinking, there are people that are stupid and all that, but like you said, there's not really as many. The traffic laws are more, this is the joke, it's like the traffic laws are more like suggestions.
So like, and that's not a joke. So that's like, kind of a fact. Yeah.
So like, you know, somebody's driving weird or whatever, you can just kind of like cut all the way around them and, you know, or that's normally what you do. Just avoid that person. And, anyways, that's something I've observed. And so.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, hey man, can you just share some more information on yourself and your Borderless podcast? Cool. Tell us more about how we can find you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I have the borderlessblog.com is kind of the center of everything there. You can go find a lot of my stuff there. And I have a podcast, Borderless Podcast, on iTunes and Stitcher and all that. And I haven't been doing too much lately, but I am planning on picking that back up. And I have lots of blogs. I have videos. I have two YouTube channels. You can find all this on borderlessblog.com. It's basically about traveling, investing, and living internationally, and all that kind of thing. And I also have borderless health insurance, where I help people with global health insurance. So in Mexico, you have the public and private hospitals. And so if you ever got into something, you know, like an accident or something really bad, and you needed to go to a hospital, because obviously you want to avoid going to any hospitals. But if it, unfortunately something did happen that, you know, in much of Latin America, you have a parallel private system, which is world in a way, way, way better than the public system. In order to get access to that, you have to get private health insurance. So I help people with that. And, but basically you can just go to borderlessblog.com. And, if, you know, if there's anything that maybe I can help you with, if you want to, speak to me, I do strategy calls as well. And you can sign up for that on the website.
Very good. Sorry about that. I had a cord I had to connect to my computer. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. It would be great to have you on at some point in the future and just talk about more crazy stuff that's happening. And, really cool to talk with another veteran who's from the US and moved to Mexico, and, you know, we're in similar situations. So, thanks very much, James. Man. I'll talk to you in the future.
No problem, Andrew. Yep. See you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.